Welcome, everybody. We are already in June of 2020. Can't believe the year is going so quickly, and nobody's left the house since March, or at least some of us haven't left the house since March. So, welcome. A lot of you have been asking about the book. I've sent it to many of you. The book is out and the Audible version is out. If you have read the book and you liked it, could you do me a huge favor and go to Amazon.com and write a favorable review? I would really appreciate it. So thank you very much for that. And those of you who are in the EA class, over the weekend, we discovered a new feature that Prometric had initiated called the Pro Proctor, where people can sign up for an at-home exam that's proctored by somebody remotely. And apparently, in their video, they show you could do it anywhere on the planet. It just didn't work for us. So, checking with the IRS, it turns out that it was working briefly on Sunday. For some people, they found it in their accounts when they were trying to set up appointments, and IRS put the kibosh on it because they are not ready for this particular closed book, work at home, completely clear the area around you. The proctor needs to be able to see 360 degrees in all directions. And IRS said, And excuse me one second. The one person that I did find on Facebook who had actually managed to schedule an appointment this way, the IRS said, no, we are canceling that appointment, and she is going to have to do it in person just like everyone else. But they are looking into it. They think it's an interesting option. I don't know if they will get to it this year, but I'm hoping that they do because this is such a horrible year. The other thing he hasn't done for me yet is I have asked that under the circumstances with everybody not being able to get appointments, to please give everybody 3 years to finish all three parts, not just the people who had taken at least one part by last year. Still haven't gotten a yes on that, but I'm quite annoying and I will keep bugging him. So let's get into today's roundtable materials. And what we try to do is do an introduction. And I want a brief introduction. Tell us your name, where you're located, why you're here today, and if you're going to have a question. Don't ask the question now, just tell us if you are, and I'm going to make a note to come back to you. If you don't have a microphone, then please write your introduction and I will be your voice, okay? So this is how it starts. My name is Eva Rosenberg. I am the Tax Mama, and I'm here in sunny California, where at 8 o'clock in the morning we already had to turn the air conditioning on, and I'm here to learn from you. So, Aida, let's unmute you and have you do an introduction. Hi, Aida, does your microphone work? A little box pops up on the right-hand side of the screen that you need to accept. We'll come back to you if you like. Anne, let's see if your microphone actually works today. We know we were able to find it. Okay, Roberta, we won't call on you. I'm not hearing anything, Anne. Okay, not working. Julio, how about you? No. Okay then. Crystal, you just moved up. Okay, let's see if your microphone works.
Good morning, Eva. Can you hear me okay?
We can. You're a little soft. If you make it a little bit louder, then we'd love to hear your intro.
This any better?
Much better. Thank you.
Okay. Good morning. My name is Crystal Alvord, and I live in Linwood, Washington. And I am pursuing my EA, and I'm in the Tax Mama EA class. And hopefully I'll be of more support to everyone in my office once I attain.
Oh, you will. And will you have any questions you want us to come back to you for?
As of right now,
Today.
no.
Okay, you may think of some, so then let us know. Great to have you here. Marty, how about you? Marty, microphone work?
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Oh, marvelous. Yes, thank you.
Okay, good morning, Eva, and good morning, everybody. My name is Marley Delmau, and I am actually fairly close geographically to Tax Mama in Simi Valley, California, Ventura County. And I've been meaning to take this course for a couple years now, but it was never the right time until I am here at home. So this was the perfect time. And I hope that with this enroll agent license, I can actually gain the confidence to prepare more complex tax returns. I have been doing individuals, but not that complex. So my goal is to be able to learn and be able to provide great service to my clients.
Oh, you will. And when we get restaurants opened up again and we can actually have our San Fernando Valley breakfast meetings in person again, then we'll get to meet you.
Oh, yes, I would love that.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Okay, Julio, let me try you again. I'm going to unmute you and look for a little box to pop up on the right-hand side of your screen. Okay, I'm going to unmute you now. And I'm making a note that we're going to come back to you with a question later. Okay, and Marley has a question for later. Okay. All right, it's not working. I'm sorry, Julio. Patrick, hi, Patrick. He's going to be the furthest away. Well, maybe. Hey, Patrick. It all depends on geography because from me, Patrick is in Mexico. Terry, on the other hand, is at the near the East Coast. Terry, let me unmute you.
Can you hear me? I'm on a new headset.
We can. Yeah, you sound a little distant, but you're about 2,500 miles away, so I understand.
So my name is Terry Kololipa. I am a Tax Mama alum. She is my tax guru. And I'm here just to support all the newbies and just to tell you that keep plugging away because eventually you will pass.
Thank you. And you are where?
I am in South Carolina now, but I'm a Pittsburgh native.
She was almost a neighbor of Susan. So that is very cool. Thank you very much. And one of the things that I do try to do wherever possible is I try to use the services of my students or refer clients to my students because I don't take new clients on anymore. And, Terry is one of the people who's been doing a lot of work helping me. She is so terrific and accurate about the work that she does. So she may be furthest of all because, Crystal in Washington is just up the coast. Okay, those of you who want me to do, hi, Debbie. So do you have a microphone? Let me see if I can unmute you. Those of you who want me to read your introductions, please post them and I will do that for you. Hey, Debbie. Not hearing anything. Okay, and I know that Donna does have a question. So, we'll get to Donna's question and she'll paste it in because she sent it this morning and I didn't have time to add it. So before we get to the questions, let me just tell you a little bit. Oh, there we go. I've got Judy Steele, and I'm working to become a fabulous EA under the tutelage of Eva. I'm in Ventura County, near Eva also, and I have a headset, just haven't been able to get it to work yet, and won't take up class time. Maybe for Saturday, you will get it to work because we've got some really important stuff going on Saturday's class. Debbie, okay. So those of you who do have specific questions, do hang on to them until we get through everybody else's. All right. Though this may give you an answer in general, Debbie, we have that new PPP Flexibility Act, so the Payroll Protection Program Flexibility Act that was signed into law by the president last week. What it does is increases the time to pay back those payroll protection loans to 5 years. It was limited to two. And the other big issue that it causes, that it gives us, is the original version of the law said that you had to use the funds 75% for payroll, and you can use the other 25% for rent and utilities and still get the loan forgiven. Under the new rules, you only have to use 60% of the funds for payroll, and you can use the rest of it for utilities and rent or mortgage interest and still get the loan forgiven. There is kind of a lack of clarity about that particular thing in the law, according to some of the people who have been teaching a couple of the classes that I've already been to this week, and that this is actually like an end, that if you don't use the funds at least 60% for payroll, you will get none of it forgiven. Under the old version, that if you use 75, you didn't quite use 75%, you would be able to prorate the forgiveness. And what we are hearing is that Congress understands about that lack of clarity in the bill, and they have another, yet another law that they are writing that will correct that to allow for this to be prorated if not quite 60% is used for payroll. So we are going to have, and every week we're getting something new out of Congress because they don't think through the bills that they do as they're passing it. The other benefit that they've added is instead of having to spend the money in 8 weeks from when you received the loan, you have 24 weeks to spend it or until the end of 2020 in order to be able to get loan forgiveness. One of the other considerations was not everybody has a payroll right on the date that they got the money. And so the 8 weeks or the 24 weeks starts from the first payroll date after they've received the loan. So that takes care of some of that thing. And for some of those people who have gotten money but haven't really been able to use them because their employees haven't come back to work, like restaurants and things that weren't able to open, they are going to have additional time to be able to start using it. So we basically also have another situation where some people are going to get the money and they're not going to qualify. They're not going to qualify for the loan forgiveness. Those people who don't apply for forgiveness on time, or don't qualify will have 10 months from the time the program expires to begin making the payments, and then they will have 5 years to pay it. So that's just the overall information. I'm going to try to put together an hour or so worth of summaries and record that for Lambers this weekend, and so that will be available on their site next week. I think they're going to offer it as a free course. Some more things that we have on that outline: businesses with loans that are forgiven are able to delay paying their payroll taxes just like everyone else. So we were originally told that we weren't going to be allowed to use that deferral that they're adding to the Form 941 to allow people to pay the payroll taxes later. So this flexibility bill gave that back to us. And the bill also provides additional time in which an employer may rehire or eliminate a staff person or an employee, and not be penalized. Some employees aren't coming back. They're getting too much money from unemployment. Some employees have gotten other jobs, or the employer is trying to replace the employee and they can't find a replacement. So they have some leeway over that. And so the bill itself, this new bill, is only it's 10 pages long, but one of the pages are blank. So you can read the bill over here with more detail, and I will gather some of the information from the several courses that I've attended this week already, and we'll put that together into a summary and kind of tie it into some of the original bill. So hopefully that gives Debbie some kind of an answer. Let's see, the other introductions. Julio, I'm located in Broward County, Florida. I'm a tax pro working for H&R Block Advisors. Love your course, and I thank you so much. Donna Tukey is an alum, currently executive director of the Illinois Society of Enrolled Agents. And Donna, you're an attorney, aren't you? And we'll get to your question. All right. Oh, Debbie, the good webinar that I just attended was at CSTC, California Society of Tax Consultants. They're doing the Academy on Tuesdays and Thursdays. There's two classes going on right now. And the good webinar by Claudia Stanley was excellent. And it has some computations about those EIDL numbers. So when they make that available as self-study, I will let you know more about that. Let's go to Donna's question before I, well, let me just do the other IRS news and then we'll go to the questions. So first of all, for those people who live outside the country, their due date is normally June 15th. That's the original due date. IRS has postponed that to July 15th for people with addresses out of the country. People who are stuck out of the country, I would try to at least get them an extension in the meantime anyway. One of the issues about June 15th, which is coming up, is not all of the states have complied. Not all of the states have complied with the July 15th deadline for the estimated tax payments. So you may want to check with your own state to see if you have that issue. Those of you in Washington State and Florida don't have an issue with that. They have proposed regulations about primary care arrangements and health care deductions for sharing ministry memberships. Some of you have heard about these sharing ministries that some of these religious organizations have put together, and those relate to their own form of non-insurance, but kind of like an insurance pool. IRS is making those payments, those contributions deductible as medical payments, and you can use your HSA funds to pay for that. So that's kind of good. Retirement plan participants are able to sign their notices, their distribution requests, and so forth electronically. So that's making that a little bit easier. A lot of people can't get out to a notary. I have one client who I'm desperately trying to get him to sign some powers of attorney, some durable powers of attorney, and because he's losing it, he is, sliding into dementia, and I need him to do it while he is still competent. And he won't go out to get it done, doesn't want to, has all these objections about having a mobile notary come and so forth. So we're still struggling with that with some of the old people, but I'm really concerned that it may be too late. The other thing you may have heard about is IRS is finally going to be opening up electronic filing options for the 1040X. It's only going to be for 2019 returns, and a lot of people have already filed their 2019 returns and may need to amend them. And we know that the IRS is sitting there on growing mountains of paper that are going nowhere. And so, if they need to amend their 2019 returns, I believe in July they are going to be opening up 1040X. This is going to be an experiment. If they can get this to work, we'll start being able to work with prior years. And of course, those people filing for net operating losses, now that the CARES Act sent net operating losses back 5 years, the IRS has special fax lines for the personal and the corporate. What do you call them? The 1139, and what's the individual 45 something for those quick refund requests? They have fax lines, so you don't send them in on paper, and so those are available, and sometimes they are also working. So yeah, thank you, Bernice. You're also a notary. He's in one of the Carolinas. Okay, so let me go to the introductions. Bernice Brightbill is in Pasadena, California. Look at all you California folks. You are a notary, and you know, if you were here, heck, I'd take you over there. Okay, so let's look at Donna's question. Donna is about a SEP IRA contribution. Client's return is done, but she doesn't have the funds for what she wants to contribute. If I e-file the return, the contribution is July 15th, is due July 15th. If I put her on extension, she has until October 15th. It appears that even if she is on extension, she can now file the return, but has until October 15th to send the contribution. Seems like a loophole. That's a good question, Donna. I don't have confidence in that. And as long as the return is done, and you know, I know exactly what the circumstances are, I will insist on having my client make the contribution before I actually file the return. There are a number of reasons for that. One, you file it now and take the deduction for the SEP IRA contribution, and she never makes it. Now what? Two, I'm not positive that you can make the contribution after the return is filed. So those are my main two objections. And the first one is very valid because I've had clients, you know, promise that they were making their IRA contributions or their SEP contributions or whatever. And then, you know, they tell me they've done it. When we look at it next year, they haven't done it. And now we have to amend. So clients, you know, are anyway, the other thing is, regardless, right now, we have, you know, the deadline coming up in a month for all of those different payments. All of the different payments. So July 15th, we have last year's balance due on the 1040, possibly balance due on the state, the first quarter estimated payment, the second quarter estimated payment, and regular IRA or Roth IRA contributions. We have five different things that are due by July 15th. Please have your clients start making those payments now because, you know, they may not be able to come up with $10,000 or $20,000 by July 15th. And if they are in any way short on anything, put them on extension. They're not going to be able to get time for the IRA contributions if they want to deduct those. So those should be the first things they should make, they should use the money for if they have limited funds. Use the money for the IRA contribution, reduce last year's taxes. They will have, they put them on extension, they'll have late payment penalties of 0.5% per month. That's it. But that is going to start probably from the beginning of the year. So that's just a thought. One of the things I wanted to tell you about is I don't know if you've been going to Twitter. There is something called Tax Buzz Chat. This is by the Counting Works people. They do this once a month, usually on the first Wednesday of the month. I suspect that this year it's going to be on the second Wednesday. Not positive, it could be on the first. But there are a lot of interesting questions, and there are about a dozen or so tax pros who generally participate. And if you go over here, you can see last month's or this month, it's June, this month's conversation about how people's practices are dealing with COVID-19. Donna says she'll pay the taxes she owes now, but the taxes are based on a lower amount based on her making that IRA, that SEP IRA contribution. So definitely pay, have her pay the various taxes if she can, but I still wouldn't file the return until she makes that contribution. But that's just my opinion. You know, that's my opinion. So let's see. Julio said he had questions. Julio, did you want to paste in your question? And then we'll get to Marley's question. So hopefully those of you who had questions, oh, thank you. You are so terrific. Okay, foreign earned income. Client is a US citizen. The client is in Germany working for a German company. As I understand, foreign earned income is compensation for services you earn during the period in which you have a foreign home and you meet one of the two residency requirements, one physical presence test and two bona fide residence test. The client qualifies for physical presence. Okay. Client was awarded a lawsuit settlement of compensation of 200 euros from a company that he previously worked for as an employee. Client relinquished his rights to equity in the company in exchange for the 200,000 euros. In foreign earned income, the word earn is the key term and it is eligible for the exclusion. Is this lawful settlement earned money or passive money? And does it have to be considered earned income? And how should it be taxed? Are lawyers' fees deductible? Well, it depends on what the settlement is for. And in this case, it sounds to me like the settlement, Marley, don't type your question yet. It sounds to me like the settlement is, or type it, you know, on a Word doc and paste it in when we're done. Sounds like the settlement is related to shares he may own, have owned as an employee, of stock options or things like that. So it's not any kind of discrimination settlement. It's not physical injury settlement. So it's a regular settlement. So the legal fees aren't deductible. We don't have an above the line deduction for the legal fees, and legal fees used to be deductible on Schedule A, and most of these kinds of things are no longer deductible on Schedule A. So he's going to pay tax on the whole thing without getting a deduction for the legal fees, which I think, excuse my English, is a really shitty deal. Is it earned income? It is earned income because it is for a form of compensation. Employee stock options are part of the fringe benefits of being an employee, part of the compensation package. So it qualifies as earned income. Now, if he gets this in the year 2019 and he already has other foreign earned income, you know. It's still going to be in excess of the total foreign earned income limit. Or in this year, it's still going to be in excess of the foreign earned income. It won't be subject to self-employment taxes because he got this as an employee. So at least you get that much. I would maximize whatever I can with the housing deduction, the housing allowance, to reduce some of the taxable part of the income. And then, what he might have some options are since he has all of this taxable income, if he has children, there is enough income there for him to qualify for the child tax credit, not the earned income credit, possibly the American Opportunity Credit if there's any of that, but also for IRA contributions. So he would qualify for that and can still make those until July 15th. And Patrick is typing. Patrick operates out of Mexico. And he says, yes, and use the foreign tax credit for taxes paid on Germany in excess of the exclusion. So let's say that, he has 50% of his income that's excluded, the other 50% that isn't. So you're going, whatever that ratio is, you look at his total foreign income and the part that ends up being taxable, that percentage, you're going to multiply that times the foreign taxes that he paid, and he'll be able to use Form 1116 and the Form 2555 for the excluded income. So, Julio, does that help? Thank you, Patrick. I forgot about the foreign tax credit. Okay, so you're good with that? And Patrick is typing. Thank you. Okay, Marley, go ahead and paste your question in. And Anne, is there any chance that the legal fees are deductible at all? Marley says client lives abroad. There we go, and has been filing tax exclusion average income for the last 5 years, 36,000. He is full retirement age and is going to start receiving Social Security benefits. The Social Security benefits aren't covered by the exclusion. They aren't normally taxable, but you're still going to do that computation of this half of the Social Security benefits plus all of the other income plus the non-taxable interest. Now, I don't know if the excluded, the foreign earned income exclusion will also get counted back in for the taxability of the Social Security benefits. So what you're going to need to do is go into your software, copy the client's file. So let's say the client's name is Marley and you have a 2019 file. Copy it, save it again with Marley tax planning. Or Marley planning, and then put in the numbers for the Social Security benefits in addition to whatever his other income is, and you can do that as an active live projection to see what the results are going to be. So if you don't have a separate tax planning program, and I know the software includes something that will do some half, whatever tax planning, this is the best way to do that is actually put in real data. So if you copy the file the way it is now and save it in another name, you don't have to re-enter all of the data because it's already there. You can delete some of the data that won't be there or reduce some of the income he's not going to have. So that may work for you. That's what I like to do because then I can see, obviously the rates are going to change a little bit, but I can see how the numbers are going to flow. Anyone else have any questions? And remember, the earned income exclusion is only for earned income. So other investment income and things like that aren't going to be excluded. And it's only going to apply, the earned income exclusion is only going to apply while he's working. And he could still be working and collecting Social Security. I am. Shh, don't tell anybody. But I was lucky enough to be able to collect my husband's and not tap into mine. So that's worked really well. Hang on, let me look for something for you. IRS lawsuit settlement. I looked at it so much that lawsuit settlement. Here we go. That Google knows exactly what I'm looking for. There's a 37-page IRS audit guide. This is the IRS tax audit guide on lawsuit settlements. And you can see if there's anything in there that would give your client a chance of getting the deduction for the attorney's fees. I really think that's a bizarre law because, attorneys typically on these kinds of contingency cases get between 35 and 50% of the fee. So it's absurd to have the taxpayer having to pay tax on the money they don't get, and we can't just take the net amount. It depends. That's where if we are able to work directly with the case and we have the other party pay the client directly and have it in the contract that they pay the attorney directly, then you may have a leg to stand on. And then the lawyers are paying tax on the same money. Yes. And then the lawyers are paying tax. And we had a tenant in one of in our office when we were up on Ventura Boulevard, the little penthouse area. And he was a personal injury attorney, and he did this thing where when his clients got their settlements, it would go into his trust account. And if it was like October, from October on, and he didn't want to show any earned income, any additional earned income, he wouldn't pay them until January, thinking that if he didn't disperse the funds until the next year, he didn't have to pick up the income. Meanwhile, these people aren't getting their money. And the IRS, when they audit these trust accounts, they do it on the basis of when the money came in and when it should have been dispersed. So he had some other stupid illegal tricks that he was up to, and fortunately, he was audited on some of it. And I don't know exactly how the audit turned out, but I made sure that my friend charged him a lot of money, a lot. So anyway, that's the IRS audit guide on lawsuit settlements. Hang on to that link and download that file because it comes up all the time. Yeah, Tony says messing around with the client trust funds is a main way attorneys get disbarred. One of the things that I really have fun doing is representing attorneys in audit. I had a bankruptcy attorney client that was being audited, and it was amazing how much he didn't know about the tax bankruptcy rules. But I have protected a number of attorneys from getting disbarred by making their activities, not Paul, but making their activities seem innocent, inadvertent, not deliberate. And so, but once they go through that, they kind of learn their lessons and they clean up their act. Otherwise, I won't work with them. So that's got to be part of the deal. If I see somebody who's really, really sleazy, I won't work with them, which is why I didn't want to work with him. Anyone have anything else that you want to bring up? So we can talk about anything you want, and if you have a microphone, I will unmute you and we can talk about that. Right now, the CSTC classes are on the net operating loss and on the retirement changes in, I guess, the CARES Act, the Secure Act, and so forth. Marley has another question. I don't know why I keep calling you Marty. Maybe I need to get better glasses. Marley, go ahead and type in your question. Or you have a microphone that works, doesn't it? Let me just unmute you. Hold on. Hey, Marley, go ahead. We'll unmute you.
Can you hear me?
We can. Yeah, I forgot. We should have done that in the first place.
So I was going through the tax book, making all the changes that they had posted on their website. And there's a bunch that were posted April 20th for the tax book 2019, which is a lot to do with the extension, the change in filing deadlines, and the other things that due to the COVID. Now, none of those are going to be on the exam. And I think that you have said that repeatedly, that only that things that pass as of December 31st.
Yes, I've said that repeatedly.
So I should ignore all the changes that were posted for 20 for the exam.
For the exam, not for your clients, but for the exam. So, I'm having a hard time, remembering whether things like the personal residence cancellation happened before December 31st or after December 31st. So I'm trying to kind of sort that stuff out for you. But yes, try to untwist your mind so that when you're at the exam, you know not to think about those things.
Okay, awesome. Thank you. I just
Okay.
it applies to 2019, but it's like no, I cannot think of anything that passed after March or anything like that.
No, so anything that happened after January, and we have a lot of those things that gave us additional time, that also gave us some additional deductions and credits. They didn't happen until afterwards, even though they go back to 2018, they are not going to be on the exam. The exam gets produced based on what was already in place by December 31st. Otherwise, they'd never be able to finish the exam.
So even though, for instance, the floor for the medical deductions that was originally on the tax book at 10%, and then at the beginning of the year they updated the amount back to 7.5%.
They did that before the end of the year.
Okay.
Okay. I think they
Maybe
did
that
that
was.
before the end of the year. I'll have to look it up. I'll have to look up and see which law did that, but I'm pretty sure that happened in as part of the Secure Act and the Disaster Act.
That was approved
So,
before December 31st, 2019.
exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. All
Thank you.
right. Thanks. Okay. Patrick has a question. What is a good way to limit communications with clients? For example, I have clients that use WhatsApp, Messenger, email, and phone in combination, then I never know where to look for their last response. Any idea on how to be less available but give good customer service? All right. First of all, I don't use all of those things. Okay. Absolutely not. I tell them the only way that I want them to send me information, we can have conversations, okay? But the only way I want them to send me information, as far as what's going on the tax return, has to be in writing. They can send me a letter, they can email it to me, or they can fax it to me. I will not take it in any other form because then I know where everything is. More specifically, we are using that Secure File Pro system, and they can upload anything that they want into the Secure File system so that they have, because that's the main place that we are pulling, the W-2s, 1099s, and so forth. I will not take anything verbally because I can't prove it later on that they said that unless I keep every one of those recordings. I may meet with them and have a conversation with them on one of those methods. I will not use Messenger and I will not use WhatsApp because they are invasive. They keep popping up in the middle of whatever I'm typing or doing and they interrupt my flow of work and my flow of thought. I flat out will not use anything invasive. And on my Messenger, for instance, in Facebook, I say, if you actually want to have a conversation with me, you send me an email. I will not be responding to that. So you decide, Patrick, which tools that you're willing to use. You set the ground rules, send it to them in writing that these are the ground rules on how to get me information that is going to end up in the tax return. You do that, you take control, you set the limitations and the barriers, and if you ignore them when they send you those other things, they will soon learn that that's not effective. So that's probably a good way to set the ground rules and not have to look in 20 places. Otherwise, information totally gets lost in the system. Patrick, what are you using for your cloud-based system to get uploads and things? I'm just curious. I know there are so many different ways that you can do it, and I don't know what limitations. Citrix Secure File. Okay. And you can set up a folder for each client, and you can set up separate folders within the client for their various business entities and their personal, and separate ones for different years. And so that is the first instruction. Anything that's going to end up in the tax return, try to put it there. Otherwise, email it, and hopefully you have a separate email. And don't put ID numbers and documents with ID numbers into the email. That's what the secure file system is for. Do I have a preference over Secure Drawer versus Citrix? I haven't used Citrix, so you'll have to ask Patrick, but we used Secure Drawer for a while and it has that Silverlight thing and stuff like that. A lot of my clients couldn't use it from work. You had to keep uploading and downloading and updating the stupid Silverlight thing. And what we use is Drake's Secure File Pro. And since we did that, even our most inept technical clients have not had a problem with Secure File Pro. So that's Drake's version, and it's not expensive. And Lulu says it has a two-factor authentication. If you set it up, and you can set it up so that it's customized, you have your own custom URL. Hang on, Drake. Secure File Pro is over here. No, not that one. Drake. By the way, I was answering a question for somebody in Facebook and they wanted to use a Mac. They were looking for tax software that works on a Mac. And, we were aware that Drake's software works on the Mac. I didn't realize the online version of Drake only works on the 1040. Pro Connect will work on all of the different entities, and Susan really likes OLT Pro, which is very inexpensive, and that also works on the business entities as well. So for those people who want to use a Mac, but one of the things that Lulu and I are coming to the conclusion that if I'm traveling and I need to go to an event, either to teach or attend, I don't want my client data with me. So keep a separate computer that you travel with if you're not going to be working on client stuff, so you can't accidentally lose the computer or compromise client data. There are some fairly inexpensive tablets or computers you can get these days, with wireless and everything else, probably under $500, that you can use when you're traveling. And the advantage of one of those online systems is that you can still do client work and not have your client's data compromised. So that you can log into, say, ProConnect or OLT, and it's all backed up, it's all there, and it's not on your computer. So that is a very powerful advantage to using the online tax software. The other disadvantages, of course, it's seriously slow and clunky and isn't as versatile as the regular software that you use. So, anyone else have any questions? I've used Sage Next for Drake hosting and I get the full Drake package. So, Patrick, you're telling me you get the full Drake package and SageNet hosts the whole thing online, so it's not on your computer. Okay. All right. That works. Okay, Donna, go ahead and post your question. Oh, okay. I thought there was a way to do it for Drake. Yeah, that's why I was so surprised when I looked at their online package and saw it was only for 1040. Yeah, do you see that, Tony? They are super inexpensive. So, if you're not going to have complex clients with 100 partners in a partnership, probably 10 states or something like that, it's probably fine. Donna, you do have a microphone? Bernice says she's had it from 2009 and they're great and inexpensive. Donna, okay, I don't remember your microphone working. Let me try you. I will unmute you. Let's see if it works. Here are the mellifluous tones.
Okay, here I am. Can you hear me?
Hi there.
Hi there. First of all, your book is great. I ordered it in the audio version and have been listening to it. And one of the best things is that you read it yourself. And so you have just the most wonderful voice. And it's very, gives one confidence in reading this. So if anyone is looking for a good audiobook, I highly recommend yours. But
And it can put you to sleep, right?
well, I guess
At night.
at night it can, but you just pick it up the next morning, backtrack it, and then focus on it. But my question is not tax related, but more how people are gathering in this COVID era, because I am the executive director for the Illinois Society, which is an affiliate of the NAEA. And we postponed our 2-day seminar that was supposed to happen next weekend because people just were not comfortable coming together. And we're going to meet tomorrow by Zoom, the board. And besides just Zooming and similar platforms, any other ideas? How are people feeling connected to their groups in this era?
Well, what we're doing, we have our breakfast meeting here in the valley that's been in existence for over 40 years. And we can't go to the restaurant anymore. So I have put it into Adobe Connect over here. One of the problems is a lot of people are having, problems getting their microphones to work in the system. So someone suggested we look at Zoom.
Right.
So Zoom for $14.99 a month, you can have 100 people in the room. So I'm going to look at that for that next meeting for those people. And if I do that, maybe we'll do that for these meetings. For the California Society of Tax Consultants, we were supposed to have an event starting, we were supposed to have an event, a 3-day event last week in Reno, and obviously that's not happening. So what they have done is they have taken those sessions and spread them out online on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So 4 hours on every Tuesday and Thursday morning started this week. It will go all the way through, I think, the end of August to account for all of the sessions because there were multiple tracks at the same time during those 3 days. So they are doing it on Tuesdays and Thursdays, 4 hours every morning. I went to the first one on Tuesday, right? And it was done through Zoom. And the speaker had her camera on and her little face was up on top, and then the slides from her computer. And there was a moderator who was fielding the questions and stuff that people had, and she paused between the different areas or the different polls to answer questions as she was going along. So that worked really well. So apparently Zoom is fairly good. I don't know how the platform works well for tracking the polls or things like that, but a lot of people are using Zoom for that, so it must work.
Right. I have a subscription as the $15, and I have used it already for a board meeting. And one of our members actually has put together a meeting, it's no CE credit, that she has done. And so I know it can be done with, so I'm okay with that. One of the problems I ran into is we have a lot of old members, and they are having trouble adjusting to this new technology.
Of course. And you know what? Time to grow up. There is no choice. We're not coming to their house.
Right.
So, either they get into what's going on or they're going to find themselves left out. And there isn't, I'm very sympathetic, but there isn't really any choice under the circumstances.
Okay.
And we don't want those old people having to come into a place
No.
and get exposed and sick.
Right. That's why, right. By the way, here's a note. Their NYU has a high-level tax conference every year. It's more geared towards, big corporations
Representation
and representation. Well, they're offering
and the
it.
tax controversy.
Yeah, and they're offering it for free. So I wrote a note. If you Google it, or put it in a chat, NYU, they're going to offer it, as you mentioned, like a couple hours over a couple days, but they're not charging a registration fee. So I'm trying to find out now how
Whoa, yeah, find that for us. That's great.
registration fee, how we register. I said I wanted to share it with my fellow enrolled agents. The other
I
thing.
appreciate that. That would be great. Yes, go ahead. And Judy, in the meantime, has a controversial opinion, but Judy, go ahead and type it. Meanwhile, we'll listen to Donna.
Well, I was thinking of doing some networking events. I was going to propose this tomorrow and seeing if I could find a vendor who would come in and chat on this venue for a few minutes and maybe charge them a small amount of money, because when we've postponed this 2-day meeting, we're losing not tens of thousands, but probably $8,000 to $10,000 of revenue for our little association. And for an hour, no sleep.
Talk
Talk
to
to.
Jamie Dunn at Avalara,
Okay.
and Avalara, which they're all about sales tax. And I'm going to send you her email address. I'll email that to you because I don't really want to put it in here.
Okay.
She would probably be very happy to be a sponsor.
And then they could give us a demonstration. I think that,
That would be
sort of
great.
anonymous.
They don't do they, I asked them for a customized demonstration last year when I first started talking, and they wouldn't really customize it, but they've got a lot of canned demonstrations.
Okay. All right. I will also I notice that NAEA is seeking nominations to their board, but I sat in. Do you ever sit in on their board meetings? I don't know if there's anyone here on this group call that is, but it was sort of a wild ride. It was over 2 days, about 8 hours, the National Board of NAEA.
Way back in the beginning, when I had ambitions, I used to participate. I was on the board of CSEA and I went to the NAEA meetings and stuff, and just not worth my energy.
That's sort of
I
what
did not appreciate their political behavior towards each other, and it really annoyed me to see the various members going in and out of each other's hotel rooms at night when they were married to other people. I'm not a prude. I am really a girl of the 60s, okay, of free sex and all of that. But married people, I do have a problem with. Anyway, so that was just
But
whatever. Okay, so
and then one other comment
yeah,
I'm going to ask.
I'm hearing all of this other stuff. You're not on a headset, are you?
No, I'm not on a headset, but I don't have anything
That's why
behind
we
me.
get all of that feedback. Okay, go ahead. I'll not talk. It doesn't work if I'm talking.
Well, just that if for anyone who's not already getting these, I think that the alerts that come, I think on Friday, written by Bob Kerr, are excellent. I hope.
They are.
I'm trying to put together. I get a lot of. I get several requests a month or 6 months for people that are just joining, becoming an EA, and I'm trying to put together a list of resources so that one can stay informed. And then some people want to know how to become an EA, and of course, your class and your program is top on my list. But I'm.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, let me know, and if you send me your list, I may be able to add some stuff to it.
I will do that.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it. Thank you for those ideas. And if anyone else has any ideas, they can reach me through the ILSEA email.
Okay, great. Or you can ask me and I will put you in touch with her permission. Because I never give out anyone's email address without their permission, except the one I just sent you for Jamie Dunn.
Okay, and I will.
Okay. All right. Judy says, my thoughts are trying to get people back out there because I'm seeing so many people falling into the abyss. There's a lot of conflicting information about what we're supposed to do. And that's true. As much as possible, where states are opening up venues and having people be able to meet. It's a choice. Do we want to meet in person? If we do meet in person, we do need to have the distancing. We do need to have no handshakes, no hugging, or anything like that. But here's the problem. Older people, and I say older people who have a tendency not to have come into this century with the technology are also people who tend to be somewhat more frail. They tend to be a little bit more hesitant, obviously, or they would have come into the century, and they tend to have various medical issues. They are at risk. We get those people out into those particular venues among a lot of other people, and some people are just careless, and they will bring whatever they're carrying with them and infect people without thinking twice about it. We like to think that our friends are much more considerate, and the people that we know or interact with are much more considerate. The fact is, they're not. Every time they reopen areas, the illness rate goes up. So if you're going to go out there, fine. And I have a niece who's taking her kids out to various national parks every a couple of days a week and going out there. They're not interacting with other people, but they're out doing a lot of stuff and interacting with close family members that they know are in good, that they know are healthy. So yeah, get people out there, get them walking, get them doing things, but getting into groups where people are sitting shoulder to shoulder and not wearing masks and things, it's an issue. So I do want people to survive this experience, and it's not going away. It's not going away. So as much as possible, sometimes these people who are reluctant to deal with the technology, if we light a fire under them, they're going to deal with it. And one of the things that you might do is to, have some a session or two where you hire somebody who helps them get through that and helps them patiently get their equipment set up. So that may be something that you do, Donna, that could be really useful for them. Because I would really like to take my breakfast meeting back to the restaurant. I really would. If they open it up, I will try to see if we can spread out or if they have a larger room next to our little room where we can spread out. So, I will try to do that as soon as they say we can go back to Denny's, and I will bring a box of little wipey things that we can wipe everything down around us. So that's my goal. Anyone else have any other ideas? So yeah, Zoom seems to be the big thing. Obviously, Gmail, Google, has meeting rooms. Facebook is actively promoting their meeting rooms, and they have little videos on how to do those things. So yeah, I get masks that say "Tax Mama." Yeah, I want that across my mouth. Yeah, Rick is wearing his bandana thing, his handkerchief, his blue handkerchief is a bandana, and I'm using scarves when I the few times I go out. So great conversations today. Anyone have anything else that you want to bring up? We'll stick around if anyone else has anything. Otherwise, if not, one of the things I love about this system is I can post the video immediately afterwards. The audio, I have to pay somebody separately to pull off the audio, but the video can go up really fast. I don't know how that works with Zoom. Definitely. Could I ask a question about the estate return? I need to make sure I have her permissions and told her she could take it back to the probate lawyer. Okay, go ahead, Bernice. Do you have your microphone on? Let me just check. Okay, Bernice, let's see if your microphone's on.
Hi, is that good?
Bye, Leo. Whoa. Oh, yeah, now you're loud. See, we were struggling with that
Yeah, I
on
found this
Saturday.
setting. Let me turn it down,
Okay.
huh? Too loud? Oh, really? Okay.
No, yeah, that's
I
fine.
it's the speaker array
Okay.
in the thing rather than just the microphone in Logitech. I finally found the setting this morning. It took me forever, but I think it's working. Okay.
Yay.
Yeah, I
So we use
told
that
you about this
Saturday. Okay, go
estate.
ahead.
Now, the gal is a new client Her friend died, left her, I thought, everything. There are four beneficiaries. So it's more complicated than I thought. And this would be my first one, and I'm really letting her know that that's the way it is, and that I, would need some help from someone. I would want to have a professional EA who's done a lot of these estates, and to have a look at it. So I would get her permission for that. And she has a probate lawyer because there's portions of this fellow's, it's all under $100,000, and there's no property or anything
Okay.
complicated except retired teacher, USAA, USSA retirements, and some of them are in a probate, which won't even be done with the lawyer they've hired until, next year sometime. And so
Okay.
the
When did he
end of
die?
September, so it's 9 months, and I either need to file it now, at least the no, okay.
No,
That's why I'm trying to help.
Okay, you have two different ways to
Oh,
go. First of all, you're not filing a
yeah.
709. You're not filing an
No,
estate
just
tax
the
return because he doesn't have 11
41.
million dollars.
Uh-huh.
Okay? What you're filing are two different
Good.
things. You're filing his final
I have to get.
1040, and if you have all of the information on everything that he earned until the date of death in September, you can go ahead and file that or put it on extension
Yes. She
before July
does. She
15th. So I
does.
would probably put it on extension.
Okay.
Okay? Then the
Okay. Yeah, she
1041,
hasn't given me the
that's
bank
going to be where
accounts or
all
any
this
of the
other stuff
trust or
gets
will yet.
filed. Now the
And she just gave me the
1041,
income. Yeah.
you're going to pick up all of the income from
No.
after the date of
All the
death
stocks were
until
sold
the
at a loss
ending
before,
period for
back
that
in February,
1041, and you have
before he
two
died
choices for
in
how to file that.
2019.
You can either do it
Everything
on a
else
calendar year up
are
through the end
cash.
of
Yeah,
December
really, it
31st,
was
which means
stupid.
you put it
I
on
don't know what
extension
who was
now
advising him,
so
but
that you have
whatever.
until October,
He did have
or
Alzheimer's. He was in a
you do it
retirement
on a fiscal
facility.
year
He would have,
starting from
he
the
had
date of
long-term care. It
death
was,
for 12
anyway,
months from
she's doing
September
this
to
all out of the goodness of her
September,
heart.
and then put it on extension
And
if you need more time for the
she
probate to
is
finish.
inheriting, and she
So I
is
don't know if you
the,
already have
the
a
fiduciary
federal
for
ID
this.
number for the estate.
And
She did. And did she say when
yes. So,
read the letter that came
yes. Yeah,
with
my,
the
but I would need.
ID number to see if they asked for a
No,
calendar
but I
year or a
know
fiscal
these
year? They
gals, and I
probably
know
asked for a
she's good
calendar
for it.
year.
So, my difficulty is charging enough to
Okay,
make it,
so those are two things. So if
legitimate.
it's on a calendar year,
I don't want
then you need to
to
put that on
get
extension.
so far
Okay? Now
that,
there
I mean,
is
I should
one
have
other
looked
thing
at
that
all of
you
this
need, and
immediately
I
when she
keep
gave it
having
to
to
me
look
about a
up
month
that
ago
form.
and realized how
This
much
is
more
a form for
complicated
the
it was. Because
assets
she said, oh,
that
I'm
get
the only
distributed. What are
beneficiary.
the
Now there's four
assets? Are they all
beneficiaries and
cash,
there's a live
or are
auction I haven't
there
seen. So
any
that's
stocks
making me
or
nervous.
anything? What are the assets that are going to be distributed?
Like I said, probably under $100,000. Well, I mean, his retirement and things came
Damn.
to about 80,000. His retirement. No. Yes. Yeah. And that's the 8971, right?
Okay.
That's what we talked about in class the other day. It all makes sense to me. I'm just nervous about it. Oh,
Not if
good.
she's
Oh,
inheriting,
okay. I
okay.
thought it was cash too. Oh, let's see.
Okay, and you have that, you have proof of that.
I think
And you
everything
have proof
stopped
that she's the
on the
only
day of
one,
death
and she signed your
except
engagement letter.
the USAA and one of the
Okay,
dividends,
and she
and
gave you a
those
retainer.
paid through the end of the year. No, but it, well, it,
Okay.
some of it is still earning interest right now, wherever it is. Ah.
Absolutely.
Definitely. Yeah, I talked a couple guys into that. And these are a couple gals that I like very much. I really want to help them because they're living on a budget. They're retired. I mean, they make a lot more than me, but it's that's
Don't be
easily done.
nervous and just let her
Okay.
know that, you know,
Yeah,
whatever you may
thanks so
have
much.
quoted her at
You
the
always
beginning from
make
based on
things
one
seem possible.
beneficiary is now
Yeah, I
significantly more
know.
complex,
Everybody
and that it's going to
wants
cost, you know, whatever it
more all
is that
the
you've
time.
decided
Okay.
that it's
Thanks
going
so
to
much.
cost. And I wouldn't touch one of these things. How much is the total estate worth? Yeah, but 5,000 is under 100. So how much under 100,000? Okay, so it's not 5,000 being under 100, it's closer to 100. Okay, so they can afford to pay at least $2,500 for all of these things, minimum. By hand. Yeah, but you may not need that if there are no actual assets other than cash that are going to be distributed. So, no, cash has no basis. I mean, cash, the basis is the same as the value. So it's only if you have to establish basis for different assets, you know, they get stock, they get vehicles, they get a house, then you need to use that. So you don't need to do this one at all. Now, that retirement, is that fully cashed out, or is somebody going to continue to get a stream of income from that? Okay, so but nobody is going to get a stream of income from the retirement account afterwards. Well, yeah, earning interest is a different matter, but when it comes to retirement, when you claim your retirement benefits, you usually have four different options. One of them is to have all of the benefits go to you. One of them is to have the benefits, say, split 50-50 between you and your spouse. One of them is to have the benefits be a little bit lower for you and all of them go to your spouse after death and so forth. So, you know, depending on whether somebody was ever married, there may be another beneficiary on the retirement that will continue to receive benefits after death. And those aren't going to be part of his estate, though. But it's just a nice thing to know. And if you have friends and clients who are living together and are not married, and one of them has really good benefits from AFTRA, SAG, whatever, they should be married before they collect one of them, you know, before the one with the benefits files for retirement benefits. They are possible. All you have to do is ask the question. Did I make up an answer? Okay. Sure. Anyone else have anything that you still want to cover? Aida, I have a question. If someone created a living trust, do we need to file a return now? No. The living trust flows through to the person's personal tax return. But if they created a living trust, go through all of the 1099s and everything that they've gotten and make sure that they put those bank accounts, those stock accounts, and so forth into the living trust. But everything gets reported on their personal tax return while they're alive. Good question. Keep it simple. Don't get a federal ID number for those trusts until they die. Anyone else have a question? Aida's still typing, so we'll give her credit. The attorney for the living trust. Yeah, I told you, these attorneys don't know anything about tax law. Unbelievable. Don't file. Just don't do anything. Leave it alone, all right? If the IRS sends a letter, then post it in the board and I'll tell you what to do. But you don't get an EIN for living trusts, for goodness sake. You get them when they die and they become irrevocable trusts. All right, make sure you have a copy of the living trust. Okay, anyone else have anything that you want to talk about? Yeah. Geniuses. Okay. Then I think we are going to call it a day, see how much fun this can be. And I will post this. It will be in the board and it will be at the IRS, at the taxmama.com site. So it'll be in the board within the next hour or so. And the audios will be up by tomorrow. So those of you in the class, I will see you tonight. Susan's teaching international, and on Saturday we are going through all of those math questions for the sales exchanges and everything else. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Okay, my friends.